developing the resources and capability of Native American businesses. Because by seeing the disparity and also how the lack of availability is out there, we look at going forward by trying to increase that availability. What is really causing that, especially the inability to bid as a prime contractor? The Chamber, we believes that the resolution actions will improve access to contract and subcontracting opportunities. We support restructuring the sheltered market program to include professional services. We believe that the size of the projects in the sheltered market program should be increased, as well as providing more opportunities for prime contracting. We believe they need to establish quantifiable goals for subcontracting to Native American businesses, both for professional services and for construction. And moving forward, in a positive note, we want to encourage joint ventures or teaming, mm-hmm. particularly of large businesses with other Native American and minority businesses and women businesses, and make that evaluation requirement of equal weight in the evaluation criteria. Finally, we'd like to see mentoring and developing of minority businesses, increasing that availability for prime contracting, and are very encouraged to hear the city recognizes the need for developing our workforce. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Hi. That's where I come in. Hi, everybody. I'm Penny Painter. I'm actually with Cooper's Eats Engineers, but I'm the co-vice chair of the Oregon Native American Chamber. And here, representing the chamber, for the most part, but I am a workforce development specialist. And this is where the apples grow, actually the seeds. I work with people that go into the apprenticeship programs. And that's where the seed of the contractor starts 90% of the time. A lot of people go into apprenticeship, they get into the trades, and they grow up through the whole system. The other thing that I have done is worked with small businesses, especially minority businesses, throughout my time doing this work. And I'd like to acknowledge the things that everyone has said pretty much. I don't want to sit here and repeat everything. It's monotonous. But the fact is that it is happening. And they do need assistance. And mentoring, I just love the word mentoring, because that really puts an umbrella over this whole cascade of water we have coming down the river. As we know, our river is rising above its edges. And that's what this sounds like this is doing as well. I'd like to see, and I actually commend the city and PDC for doing the disparity study, because what I see that it brings is opportunity. It brings opportunity all the way around. It brings opportunity for the city of Portland to look at the policies, look at the programs, revise, revamp, and change, and everything needs that to grow. Everything. Even us as human beings. And the other thing is it gives opportunities to contractors. It gives opportunities for us to speak with you today and be part of this disparity study. Thank you, Mr. Fish. I appreciate that. I appreciate the invitation. And I appreciate being part of the system. And I do see that it is going to grow, and we're all going to work together. And that's what I'd like to see, is everyone come together and work together to start help. I mean, not start, but we've already started helping the small businesses rise up and above and do bigger business. That's what it's all about. We just have to be real careful. And the one thing that I want to remind everyone of is that they are small businesses. And sometimes we have to really be careful what we wish for. I was a general contractor for 18 years, and I just kind of motivated along and did my business and survived and did what I had to do. And I took on a couple of big contracts and almost set myself up for failure because of different reasons. But this is not the day nor the time to sit down and talk about all those really wonderful individual reasons. I'd like to do that in the future. And like I said, and I want to end this with a note of the fact that I would love, and we would love, to be part of the solution and work towards helping and, you know, the city of Portland, PDC, and small businesses, and bringing more Native American businesses to the table. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, welcome.
Thank you.
Could you move a little closer to the mic so we can hear you well?
Okay.
Thank you.
My name is Anissa Furkan, and I'm representing the Oregon Assembly for Black Affairs, the Economic and Employment Development Committee. I want to thank you, Mr. Mayor, and also Commissioner Fish for initiating the work to get this study completed. I want to commend the BBC for the work that they have done. And I want to say that I am here because of the loud outcry of the Black community, the minority community, that here we are again, 1995, and we're still dealing with the same disparate issues. We can do better than that. There are a number of ideas that came out of the report. I encourage the commission to take those ideas that are positive, take former Governor Vicatia's message, just do it. If there are people blocking, people who are responsible for letting procurement contracts, if they are gatekeepers, if they are barriers, remove them. And let's get this city running. We have to do it together. We have to be inclusive. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next three are Maxine Fitzpatrick, James Faison, and Mark Matthews.
Welcome. Thanks for waiting.
Thank you.
Ms. Fitzpatrick, would you like to go first, please?
Love to. Thank you. Good day, Mayor and Council. I'm glad to be here to offer these comments. Of course, I have some prepared statements regarding the draft disparity study. In consideration of the vast disparities that exist in the city of Portland for ethnic and racial minorities in the areas of economic development, education, health, housing, civic engagement, and leadership, my initial thought on this matter is, what is it going to take for us to holistically address these disparities in the city of Portland? To simply provide justification for their existence is not a solution, it's an excuse. Today, I'm here to speak as a member of the Portland African American Leadership Forum and on behalf of an associate organization, the National Association of Minority Contractors of Oregon, commonly known as NAMCO. Construction-related activities are only a portion of the work I do professionally. However, an overarching goal in my work is advocacy and the inclusion of all community residents in the American dream of prosperity. I'm here today specifically representing the African-American population as well as other minorities. We are all aware of the numerous inadequacies that exist in economic opportunities for all in the city of Portland. Minorities have historically been left out of the mainstream economy for many reasons, including disparate treatment, something I believe may be at the core of the problem. With the current disparity study, which is the topic of the meeting, the city has positioned itself in a proclaimed defensible, yet in my opinion, an inexcusable situation of exclusion. NAMCO and others are challenging the methodology. They have been more vested in the process, and those of us who have not respectfully rely on their conclusions. I don't believe the resolution of this historical discrepancy can be satisfied with explanations and justifications. I urge the city to consider recommendations that can help alleviate the problem as advanced by NAMCO and others directly involved in the construction industry. I further urge you to consider working with them and others such as Priority Builders to answer the vast array of questions and concerns posed in Ron White's letter dated May 13 to John Jackley and Christine Moody. I believe we all know that the past does not have to be the future unless we want it to be. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. Kind regards, Maxine Fitzpatrick.
Thanks, Ms. Fitzpatrick. Sir?
Good afternoon. My name is James Faison. My company is Faison Construction. I apologize for not having a script, but I come here speaking as representing contractors. First of all, I won't beat a dead horse on the disparity study, but this disparity study was supposed to have been a poll that was put out for minority contractors, black contractors, and I'm in a huge organization, which is NAMCO, that has a tremendous backing of minority contractors, and I bet if you poll those contractors, you'll find that 75% of them guys wasn't contacted, you know? So how do you figure on capacity, or how do you figure on where minorities have been utilized? So I think that the disparity study is highly skewed, and it needs to be looked at as such. Secondly, looking at some of the programs like PDC and the city's programs, I think there's a number of things that needs to be changed. You need to look at how you're implementing jobs. And some of the things, the way you're implementing jobs is on low bid. Low bid does not work. If you look over history, low bid, all that does is put people out of business. People try to bid down in the basement and they go out of business. So you have to look at many ways that you can help minority contractors for us, helping them figure out how they can get financing. You find organizations like Awami that has helped minority contractors get money so they can do their projects and fund their projects. And they have to go out to organizations outside of the city or the county to get help to help fund organizations for its projects. There are a lot of good contractors in this city, but they need a hand up. And so I think you should look at those things. Low bid doesn't work. You need to look at the contractors they're working with, making sure that they're monitored on the jobs they do. And also you need to make sure that the people that do the bidding are doing their minority participation and it's monitored. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Sir.
Good afternoon, Sal Mayor and the board. I'm Mark. I'm the president of NAMAC, and Awami, as a lot of them called. I've had a lot of input of going to these meetings and talking about it, and we're really deep and passionate about the disparity study and how unfair it is to all of us who are minorities. And I do hope that you take a real good look at what you guys are doing as far as making your decisions. And I think when we first had the first meeting, we discussed how I am a minority contractor in Portland and an ESB contractor in Portland. And time again, when you did the disparity on minorities and women are getting underutilized, I keep seeing the ESB pop up. And it's like you talk about how to utilize the minorities, but the ESBs, and I'm an ESB, I don't get used as an ESB in Portland, but the ESBs are overtaking the economy far as us as minorities getting a hand up. We don't get a hand up. We don't even get a chance. And I think keeping the ESB piece in there is really going to make it even we won't make any ground on where we're going to go with this far as in the next 5 years, next 10 years. And I think it should be something hardly looked at and really give the minority and women a fair chance of trying to grow their business here in Portland and making a success of it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you all very much.
The last person who signed up is Andrew Colas.
Mr. Colas. Welcome back.
Thank you. I'd like to thank you all for having me here, and thank you for your service. I know that all of you guys work hard and tirelessly, and a lot of times you don't get thanked for the service that you do for our good city, but I want to thank you all. And I'm here representing Colas Construction. That's my construction company. I'm also a board member with NAMCO, and I'm also Portland Housing Bureau commissioner. So I'm kind of wearing three hats here, but the main hat that I'm wearing here is I'm an Oregonian. I was born and raised here. I love Portland. It's a city that I'm proud to be a part of. And one of the things that I want to talk about is the numbers and the disparity study. That's something that I helped with the assistance of the NAMAC board. I created the chart that we've provided to all of you. And it's really important. I understand there's three legs to the disparity study. But one of the legs, and I've talked to Commissioner Fish, and I want to thank you for having me and, you know, talking through this whole process with me. I think you've done a good job with that. And I think at the Portland Housing Bureau, we have a great board, and I think that's going to help move Portland to the next stage. And that's what we're all trying to do. In regards to the BBC, I understand they're a consultant that the city hired. And there's just, in my opinion, statistical flaws with the way they gathered the availability. An example of that is my company. I feel like we're a well-known company. My older sister is a PDC commissioner, very active as well. And our company wasn't not only on the unavailable list, we weren't even unavailable to be unavailable. So we weren't contacted. We weren't a company that was used in this sample size. And when I look at the data over that five-year period, our company did more volume than it says all African-American companies did over that period of time. So that just goes to show you how skewed the availability data is. And that's something that's really important because I understand that it's in the executive summary, you've done a really good job redoing the executive summary. But when it comes down to data, people always want to see numbers. And that's just something that I get afraid about because while we have a great commission and we have a great mayor, I keep on saying what happens when you guys aren't here to represent our city? What happens when the next group comes and maybe they aren't as compassionate and passionate about seeing this city move forward? So I keep on going back to the numbers. And one of the other things I want to just point out, the apples-to-apples comparison, I understand they're trying to have an apples-to-apples comparison with the majority firms and the minority firms, but if it was apples-to-apples, we would have no disparity in the first place. So it really isn't something that we can look at as apples-to-apples. When you leave out certain large minority firms from the data, it really skews the data because you might miss some majority firms and it would not have the same impact as if you missed some of the larger minority firms. So I would just like to urge you to keep that in mind. I know you guys are going to have to make a decision today, and whether or not this passes or doesn't pass, let's just all be prudent in driving us forward. I'm the second generation in my company. I remember a lot of the gentlemen that have spoken before you here today being a little kid and hearing them talking about the same thing in 1995. And my father said, don't worry, once you come and take over the company, we're not going to be dealing with these same issues. And I'm seeing these same issues coming to surface today. And I have the next generation of our company that I'm hoping that we don't have to deal with the same issues. So please continue to be diligent and let's all work together to move forward. And hopefully the next generation isn't talking about the same thing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, sir.
We have the consultants and Christine come back up. Go through some of the questions raised.
Good.
So if we could have the BBC folks come up and Ms. Moody come up. Who's been keeping notes?
Keeping notes.
Okay. I wanted to air out your reaction to some of the concerns that have been raised, and I guess maybe starting with how the definition of availability was defined and then how the why in the search for those that might be available some were left off the list or
That's a very good question, and again, this is something throughout the course of the disparity study we had extensive discussions with people on our advisory group, and this was questions that were raised as part of the public comment period. I might start out by saying it's a bit counterintuitive, and if the city had hired us to get the most complete list of all the minority-owned firms or women-owned firms there were in Portland, we would have done the research a different way. And I think a lot of the concerns and a lot of the questions are very appropriate and very valid. They said, if you're trying to get the biggest list of minority-owned firms, why did you do it the way you did? Why didn't you look at the certification directory? Why didn't you look at the NAMCO list? And the response is, we weren't trying to get the biggest list of any type of firm. We were trying to get the percentage of firms that were minority and women-owned from a neutral perspective, not starting with membership in a particular minority contractors association or membership in a certification directory. We were trying to take an outside view and say, we have the same way of counting firms that are majority, minority, and women and determining the percentages of firms that are minority and women-owned. And we found overall that 1 out of 5 firms, 20%, almost 20% in the industries that we were looking at in the Portland metropolitan area were minority and women-owned. And we spoke, we reached 3,700 firms and performed, of those firms, more than 1,500 were interested in doing interviews with us about their availability for specific types of city and PDC projects. In the course of doing that, we were very aware that some of the firms that may be minority and women-owned were not, for one reason or another, and we actually looked into some of the reasons, were not included in the availability database, primarily because we attempted to reach them and they declined to do an interview, or after repeated attempts to reach them. Kevin, I recall it was five attempts to reach an individual firm before we moved on. We were unable to reach them. And the same is true for majority-owned firms. So one of the key questions for us, because we're worried about percentages here, not the biggest list of minority-owned firms that we could provide, which I think might be a good thing for you all to do and still do. But because for the purposes of the disparity analysis, we needed to be able to say we had an unbiased way of getting to a list of majority, minority, and women-owned firms, not knowing necessarily which firms were minority and women-owned when we started. The approach that we used was the court-approved methodology for coming up with the availability analysis and determining the benchmarks for the utilization. Now, if we had been successful in having that much better a list and everyone that we called was willing to talk to us and give us information, would I think the percentage results be different? And the answer is no. And we've done some analysis of this, again, as I mentioned, because we talked with so many firms and we looked for if there was systematic bias in the firms that we were unable to reach or the firms that were for one reason or another, not interested in talking with us. And we did not find that we were disproportionately excluding minority and women-owned firms in doing that. So we took extensive efforts to reach firms. We knew that our process would not successfully reach each and every firm, whether that be white male-owned or minority or women-owned. We did this in a very fair and objective process that I've testified about before, and that has been successful in upholding these types of programs in other venues. Other consultants have used approaches that are somewhat similar, where they did not reach every firm, but relied on Dun & Bradstreet data as a base for this, and they were also successful in court. So of the available options for us to consider and the availability analysis, this was the most sound approach available to us.
If I could, Mayor, just follow up on one point. You had a number of people testify that they did not find their firms listed on an availability list for one portion of the work that you did. Have you gone back and considered, had they been included in the availability pool, the sort of denominator, whether that would have changed the finding of disparity, yes or no?
It would not have changed our findings. And that may be the most important point to make here is, again, I think some of these questions are legitimate. However, we did not exclude minority women-owned firms. We never counted a firm that we did not successfully contact as unavailable. We just didn't have the information for them to analyze in the study, and certainly would have if they had answered the availability questionnaire or their availability interviews. But the key point here, to answer your question, excuse me, is no, we found disparities where no programs applied. We consistently found that. Some of these disparities were very large. They were substantial disparities. If we had, I don't think we did undercount minority contractors more than majority contractors, but let's say we did. If we had been able to get more minority-owned firms into the availability analysis, the result would, the disparities would have been even larger than we had found where we were already finding disparities.
So you, okay, that last point was interesting. So the Dun & Bradstreet as the basis of the survey, literally the Dun & Bradstreet has been litigated and upheld?
Dun & Bradstreet as a source.
That's what I mean.
Some consultants just stop there and say, that is your availability, and what we believe is you actually have to call firms and talk to them about the types of work that they do, the sizes of projects that they bid
right
on.
Okay. And we're in the lightning round of this process, by the way. So
counsel,
succinct answers are great.
So counsel for NAMCO testified that there were issues, in his opinion, about those that were certified as to whether or not they were, in fact, minority or woman-owned.
That's also a very good question. The threshold question is, why include non-certified firms as minority and women-owned firms at all? And there's a few reasons. One is the courts say you ought to do it. Second is you can be discriminated against whether you're a certified firm or not a certified firm.
I'm not sure that was his point.
Okay.
I thought his point was question whether or not they were actually minority or women-owned.
We based the designation of ownership based on conversations with the ownership and control of the firm over the telephone with a firm owner or manager, and we took that information at face value. If they say they were a majority women-owned firm, we said that they were women-owned and controlled. If they said they were more than 51% minority-owned, we took that information at face value. If they said that they were white male-owned, we took that information at face value as well.
Did you ask them if they were certified or not, or are you?
We looked at the certification issue, and we actually report separate statistics on utilization of certified firms in your report.
So how bad was the disparity in the use of firms outside of our programs? If you could just sort of summarize, or in sort of the most summary of terms,
The public. The courts have said that if you can get within, 8/10 of where you ought to be, if 100 is parity, and if you can get to 80, then you may not have a substantial disparity, and it may not be actionable. All of the disparities that we've been discussing were substantial in the eyes of courts. On the scale of 0 to 100, 100 is parity, 0 is there's zero utilization. One of the measures of how bad it was 2. So that's bad. And I hope none of the people that commented today misunderstand the report to say that things are okay. Things are not okay.
Mayor, could I jump in with another related question? There's been a lot of focus on one number in the report, which is the availability figure of 1.9% for minority business enterprises in the city chart. But there hasn't been a lot of discussion today about the availability data on the PDC side, and yet that's where you found substantial disparity. In fact, in 5 of the 8 categories you looked at, you found disparity. So it in my mind raises the question, is there some difference in your methodology and your statistical analysis in what you did with the PDC data that is different than the analysis you did on the city data?
We used a consistent methodology using the same availability database. Now, PDC has different types of contracts and perhaps more subcontracting opportunities in the contracts we were examining. So availability for those PDC projects tended to be higher for minority women-owned firms, which was particularly disturbing when you saw the extremely low actual utilization on PDC-sponsored projects.
Commissioner Fritz?
So we are not limited. The numbers I understand that the concerns about the different numbers and availability and such, but your study shows, and I'm quoting, I found in numerous places where you say that there are substantial disparities. The information in this study strongly supports stronger city action to remove barriers to minorities and women business participation in its contracts, foster more contract opportunities for women and minorities, help build a strong minority and women-owned business community in the Portland area. There were substantial disparities in the utilization of minority businesses as prime contractors. Women were substantially underutilized as prime consultants on city construction-related professional services. So am I correct in reading the study as saying that, yes, you have found significant disparities, especially where we don't currently have any city programs?
No, we found substantial disparities where you do not have city programs.
So our programs are working to some extent. We can do better. I notice in Chapter 10 that you have a list of things, a suggested to-do list for us. We have four or five things in this in the resolution that we want to get started on right now. All of those things are supported by the findings in your study.
Yes, as a starting point. And if maybe some of the comments today were, if this is also the ending point, is that enough? And I think the study would say no. That's a very good starting point, and you need to do more.
Thank you.
Did you review the audit by the auditor on this related topic, Shelton Market?
Yes.
And your comments on the audit?
I think that's important information for the city to review when you're looking at kind of the next generation of the Shelton Market program, if there is one.
So, let's see, the other issue raised is it's kind of a legal issue. Are you lawyers?
I pretend to be one from time to time. Okay. No.
So, maybe, Jim, you could come up and trade out with Ms. Moody, Mr. Van Dyke. So the notion of race-based or gender-based affirmative programs within demographic categories and potentially type of work categories, have those been tested by the courts? So the gentleman who talked about truck driver that primes or subs will load up on flaggers and truckers, which has been a concern I've had. So could, if there is a disparity that is shown or demonstrated in other categories, are we allowed to be, is it your legal recommendation that we can be more proactive in some of those other areas? I don't know that I've ever heard discussed what the courts have said in terms of dividing up the problem into units.
Okay. Well, in general, I'd want to work with our folks here at BBC, but I think their example of, and I'm looking to them to see if they're going to agree with me, on electricians, you know, where we saw a certain availability for electricians. And I think that would give us an opportunity on a project by project basis to take a look at those sorts of specific subcategories.
And I can also offer that a parallel program, the federal DBE program, specifically asked you to look at areas where you only use minority contractors in those fields. If it's trucking, it could be trucking or other types of trades, and exclude majority-owned contractors. At the same time, you're also excluding those minority-owned firms from other trades. So you have unequal application of a program. You've hurt majority-owned firms perhaps unfairly in certain trades, but you also hurt minority-owned firms by not making a concerted effort to make all types of subcontracting available to those firms.
So is that a yes or no?
It is an issue to have a narrowly tailored program, you need to look at, you can't just have all your minority business participation in trucking. That makes an unconstitutional program, one. It does no help for all the minority-owned contractors out there.
So can I interpret your answer?
So you can look at specialty trades more than just construction as a whole. You can break this problem down in your implementation of any programs that you might have in the future.
So we might be able to do race-based or gender-based more prescriptive efforts in these smaller categories of work.
In fact, I've seen programs where the calculations of a project goal actually includes kind of showing the work of, we have these types of trades, we think this amount of work in these trades for this project, and we estimate that there are a number of minority women-owned firms that are certified, they're available for these trades, and we're seeking a prime contractor to go out and try to involve those firms.
And why doesn't the court recognize, or why doesn't the legal opinions or courts or what have you, AG's opinion, recognize the lack of availability as the basis for more affirmative, the ability for governments to make more affirmative, prescriptive efforts? Why is, I mean...
Mayor, I might just add, as a preview of the answer, I think in part the answer to your question begs the question of which court. As the court has become more conservative,
right,
as the Supreme Court has become more conservative, they have closed the door further and further on these kinds of programs by raising the bar. That has not always been so, and that is in part why these nominations are so heavily contested. And there are people on the court who just are allergic to race-based remedies, and therefore are looking for ways to strike down almost any program which addresses historical disadvantage. And their view, in my opinion, is that the race starts today and everyone's at the starting line together, and why look backward at anything that has historically disadvantaged people? And that is well documented in the courts and in the Supreme Court, but that is a legal barrier.
So if I could just, I appreciate that helps to add some context to my question, but on the more narrow piece of that issue, if we're a community with X number of females and X number of African-American Portlanders, but there's Y, much less number of female African-American, let's say, electricians, why is it that we are, based on what reasoning, I guess is why I'm asking, based on what reasoning has the court said you can't look at that when it comes to putting together programs like this? I mean, why is not a certain amount of responsibility placed on government for addressing the lack of availability in our own communities?
That's a very good question. Now, go back to my comments about, we did this availability analysis. Why did we do it the way we did it? We wanted to look at current availability and know what types of work and what size of jobs people bid on, and do that for majority, minority, women-owned firms. That doesn't answer. Current availability doesn't get to potential availability. And some courts have examined that issue and said, when you're implementing a program, not analyzing whether there's disparity or not, which was our charge, okay, your charge when you're implementing a program, you can look at those issues and say that, but for past discrimination, there would be more availability. And when we're setting our future benchmarks for how well we're doing as a community, we're going to take that into account, and those numbers are going to be higher than current availability. And on a project-by-project basis, can be, you know, you have a lot more flexibility there in the goals that you set.
So would that mean, for example, if we had preferential, based on, a category of work, training programs leading to a category of work that we can show not only a lack of utilization but a lack of availability, that we can be more assertive in sort of that path of work and training, given the lack of availability and the lack of utilization?
There have been some courts and some that have argued that very position. It makes sense to me. You never know in the future what it may make sense to a court, but there certainly is a lot of logic to that.
And Jim, I want to give you an opportunity to respond to the concern stated that the advice of and it hasn't always been you, there have been other attorneys, Madeline Wessel and others, but that the advice that the office of the city attorney to this city council and past city councils has been very conservative in terms of hemming us in and scaring us into not taking more risks in this area.
Well, just as a note, it's not been my experience that we've ever scared you folks very much at all. But that said, I think if the message sounds conservative, it's because I'm simply relaying the holdings of a very, very conservative Supreme Court and judicial decisions that have emanated from that. That would not be my particular position on how I would come out on it, but I think what our obligation of our office is to lay out for you as honestly as possible what the legal lay of the land is. That does not suggest that, as I think has been discussed here today, that we don't have opportunities to take remedial action, necessary remedial action to remedy the effects of discrimination. And I look forward to working with BBC in the future to trying to come up with ways to do that.
Any other discussion? I appreciate your patience. All right. Thank you. And I want to thank you for your work. And I want to thank you for, I enjoyed the, found useful the dialogue. And we'll, now that the baton has been passed, I will continue to rely on you for more. Carla, can you please call the vote?
Fish?
Today marks the end of a long and dynamic process which began about 2 years ago. And if, as I suspect, the council accepts the report, then essentially the real work begins. And so I don't want anyone to misjudge our will going forward to do the real work. And I think each of us in our own way are going to communicate that today. But I very much appreciate the way my friend Andrew Colas framed it. His concern is less with us than maybe a council in 5 years, but this council has a chance to make a difference now. And our resolution commits to doing things immediately and doing some additional things in a very prompt fashion. And everyone here has the right to hold us accountable to that. There's been few assignments that I've had on the council that have been more rewarding, in part because of the people I've had a chance to work with. And I want to particularly thank all the members of the Citizens Advisory Group. I attended every meeting and remained for the entire meeting. And I found that every time I attended a meeting, I learned something new. I'm not personally someone who has a lot of experience in the front lines of either the professional services side or the labor side. I was educated through the dynamic conversations as we went along. And what always impressed me was the tough questions that were asked of the consultants and the level of engagement. There's a number of people I want to specifically thank. Again, all the members of the advisory group for their service and the enormous amount of time they put into this. And it would be unfair just to characterize the time as the time we spent face-to-face, because there was enormous amount of time spent outside of the meetings, reading materials, commenting, attending the public forum and the like. So I heartfelt thank you. I want to thank in particular two people, Maurice Romming and Andrew Colas, who spent a lot of time in the last month with me on the phone in my office, in other ways, through my team, walking us through the concerns they had. And while I deeply respect some of the reservations they still have, because they've made them forcefully, and I respect their perspective, I also don't want to diminish in any way the impact they've already had on this process, keeping us on the right track, the substantial work that was done and was alluded to in the rewriting of the executive summary, and I think the elevating of the quality of the public debate and the understanding of our work. I want to thank the BBC team for listening and for engaging us. They were selected through a competitive contracting process over which we had no particular say other than ratifying the results of the committee's recommendation. They did the work with a lot of support along the way. And at the end, questions have been raised about methodology and implementation and other things. But I suspect no matter what report issued, we'd be having a variation of this discussion, because these issues are really fundamental. And they provoke great passion. and we can adjust some disparity findings here or there, or change a word there. But let's remember, we're talking about history here. And no amount of history, particularly history in a community where so many people have experienced barriers to opportunity, can be accurately reflected in one document. And perhaps sometimes we thought this document would do too much, and we held it out as perhaps trying to do too much. There is substantial documented findings of disparity in this report. And that's not to say that the city's efforts to this point have failed or PDC has failed. It just says we haven't gotten the job done. And there's a substantial roadmap that's been provided to us to do better and more going forward. And you'll hear from all of us the will to do that. So the hard work begins. It has been an honor to be part of this process. And what I have learned is that whatever differences we have about any detail, what we share is the passion and the commitment to remove barriers to equal opportunity. And perhaps it is discouraging that in 2011 we're still talking about those barriers. But it may be that it is a lifetime's work and not something where we can ever be complacent. And so I commit to doing my part through my bureaus and with my colleagues. And it's not lost on me that one conspicuous area of disparity that's been identified here is the PDC-sponsored contracts. That's where PDC was not the owner but was an investor. And a number of those contracts have now migrated to the city. And a number of those will be administered by the Portland Housing Bureau going forward. So we have a big role, and Andrew Kolas, who's the chair of our PHAC, has a big role. And I know you'll hold us accountable for meeting the new goals that we have set for our bureau. So thank you all, and thanks to those who spent time. I know we asked you to do double duty today. Many of you testified this morning at PDC and then here this afternoon. It's been extremely valuable. We've made an important record, and I thank you for your time. Aye.
Leonard?
I was particularly interested when Commissioner Fish was asking the council representing NAMCO if he and NAMCO believed that the methodology contained in the disparity study was flawed. And so I expected an attorney-like response to a very technical question. And his response was, after hesitating for a moment, you know, what we expect, Commissioner Fish, is leadership from you all. Now, that would be an astute observation from anybody, but coming from an attorney, I was particularly impressed that he could, on the fly, distinguish between the nuanced answers he could have given and really the larger message, which was, as I took it, the disparity study notwithstanding, there are leadership decisions that you all are going to be required to make sure that people are treated fairly and equitably when they come in to get a city contract. And I thought that summed up the entire report and the hearing perfectly in that soliloquy between Commissioner Fish and him. So for me, I'm less interested in the debate over the nuances of the disparity study than I am on the verbiage of the resolution that we are now going to vote on, and particularly where we've identified issues to help correct disparities such as bonding, insurance, pre-qualification, capacity building, access to capital, and other systemic obstacles to the success of minority and women-owned businesses in Portland, to take a direct quote from the resolution. So I agree that this is a first step. I think Commissioner Fish has done exemplary work. I appreciate the effort of everybody involved in this and the passion that goes with that. My sympathies to the city attorney for being the bearer of bad news. I've been on your side many times in delivering bad news and being criticized for that. Don't kill the messenger. I also understand that message as well. But I appreciate your candid direction to us, and I think it's been helpful, and I'm happy to vote aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish, for your leadership on this project and for your commitment to inclusion of the community in every step of the way. Thank you to the consultants, BBC, for your good work. It's a massive project, but very readable, and I appreciate the recommendations that you've pulled out for us. And also thanks to the advisory group who have done stalwart work, and to each one of you here today for coming and staying for 3 hours and more to show how much you care about this and that you are with us. We do see this, and many folks testified about, we need to do this together, and it takes all of us. And I was greatly heartened by the encouragement that you are willing to acknowledge that, yes, there have been 400 years of disparities in this country, maybe more, and it's going to take us a while to fix them, and we need to make huge strides. And I'm committed over the next 5 years, I hope, to doing my part within my bureaus, in every contract that comes to council, and in giving Christine Moody the authority to do the work that she has been doing. She's already demonstrated above and beyond commitment to inclusion of women and minorities in every contract that comes to council. And she's several steps ahead of the questions that I ask and is always searching for new ways to do what's legally defensible and then to push the limits as much as we possibly can. My Chief of Staff, Tom Bizot, pulled out 15 recommendations from Chapter 10 of the massive document, and I know that there are many, many more. So let's be really clear. This study shows that there are huge disparities in Portland. It shows that we've made some gains by the programs that we've already been trying, and it shows that we need to do better. And I am committed to doing that, and I appreciate your partnership. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank Commissioner Fish for enthusiastically accepting the assignment that I bestowed upon him. This is the controversial, difficult, legal, political policy project that you excel at, and I appreciate it very much. I also want to thank the Citizen Advisory Committee for your willingness to devote the long hours, and I want to thank on behalf of Commissioner Fish and myself, thanks to Jeff Baer, Christy Moody, Annette Palmer, Skip Newberry, John Jackley, and Jim Blackwood and Jim Van Dyke. Thanks to our consultants, BBC, as well. Because I've been around for the 1995 study report that showed that the city's efforts at that time were making no discernible difference, I'm happy to hear that there is some discernible difference between where we have made an effort versus where we have not. I think that this is a good roadmap to tell us how we need to improve upon sort of the beachhead of modest success and where we need to prioritize in terms of those areas that we're just not cutting it. I think an uncomfortable truth is that bureau managers and purchasing agents in the city are going to have to give up some of their power. I think they're going to have to be willing to have more oversight from somebody in order to make sure that we have a more consistent approach to this, and that because we have so many different project managers in the city, some have more experience in working in this fashion of providing more equality and practical opportunities than others. I think that's the backdrop to this, at least that's sort of the bureaucratic backdrop to this. In terms of my commitment, because I know this issue to a degree, and I look forward to spending more time with the consultants, I think there's a lot more we can do. And you heard a little bit about sort of the sparks of some of my hope in the Q&A back and forth between the consultant and myself. I would encourage everyone to not look at this as monolithic, that it's all the same, that all contracts are the same, that all projects are the same, that the city is the same as it was once, and that the community is the same. We have opportunities here. Because of the complexity of this issue, though, our response will probably be reasonably complex as well. And that's a lesson that I learned from this. It should be appropriately complex in terms of what we can do.
We didn't have this kind of information or this kind of detail in 1995 to justify looking at subcategories of anything. But you heard in the Q&A as we were wrapping up here, we do now, and we're going to pursue it. So thank you. Aye. We're adjourned. Good work.